Bye-bye, Nathan.
All right, fucking God help us on this one.
Love you so much!
Welcome to the unofficial King Gizzard podcast, the show about the best band in the world. Question mark. I'm Captain Chipwreck.
I'm Professor John P. Weatherclock. Happy New Year, Captain.
Oh yeah, Happy New Year to you too. It's our New Year's episode.
Yeah.
Biga.
Yes, we've moved from 2025 into the year of our Lord of Lightning 2026. And because of that, we want to talk about 2025, the year in Giz. A lot has happened. I think this has been a huge year. And what we're going to do is we're going to go chronologically from like what happened at the beginning of 2025 through the end, covering shows, album releases, leaks, news. Yeah, let's go.
Do you have a lyric?
No, please.
Life is but an eddy, so be a leaf in a stream. Eternally we return to cycle through the song we learned.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about the album a little bit.
So they'll be back. We'll be back. They'll be back to us.
Yeah.
Eternally. Forever. I think that means they're going to tour forever. Slowly.
But eternally. We're going to.
But eternally.
Yeah, we need to. We'll review 2025 and then, I don't know, maybe some guesses about 2026. To set the context for the beginning of 2025, so in November, Giz finished a U.S. tour. I know you saw a show there. I think they finished in Miami. And by that time, by 2025, Phantom Island, the single, had been released. So we knew, like, about there's an orchestra album coming. We knew it included 16 teen horses.
Six. I thought it was, right, 16 horses.
Six, it could be 16 teen horses.
Could be. Yeah, right. Why on earth not? I don't know.
So we had an idea.
What's a teen horse called? Foul?
A foal?
Colfoot. Puffed.
So we had that context going and we knew this album was coming and even the name of it. But not much happened early at the beginning of the year in Giz news until really on April 8th. We had a leak of Dead Stick, the next single. Now, was this a leak of the song or the video? Do you remember on April 8th?
This was the video. I think this was the whole kit and caboodle. We got the video at that time, for those of us who wanted to have gotten it.
So there were certain people who would listen to and watch the leaks that happened, and certain people who waited for the official drop. I respect both camps and... there are good people on both sides.
Bad people on both sides, too.
There are very bad people on both sides. I am one of them because I ate this shit up as soon as it was available on whatever
dark web. We're admitting that, are we? I wondered what position you were going to take on this matter.
The truthful position.
Yeah, you sent it to me. I was near you at the time. I had just visited you like days before then when you sent it to me as an option. You gave me the option to be the other kind of person. But I decided to be exactly the man I am, and as I am wont to do. And so we did, we saw, and then we were not necessarily allowed to talk about it on Reddit, which I don't. But yeah, what do you, how do you feel about how people should feel about leakage? As a general principle in life.
Depends on the linkage.
Yeah. There's this really alluring thing. I thought of questions that I would like to ask Stu when we... he was going to be on the next episode, but he pulled out temporarily, and there's been an indefinite delay. But I'm sure that he'll be on eventually. And I remember an Ask Me Anything that occurred on Reddit. Geez, that was also in the last year, but I didn't write a date down for that. And... they were asking, for some reason, asking like Luke or someone random, asking Cookie how he felt about leaks. And Stu piped up and said, I have an opinion about that or something. Mm-hmm. And no one followed up, but I would love to know more about that. But we won't, I guess.
Yeah, Stu could have made his opinion clear, but he just said, I have an opinion. Big surprise. Usually when Stu says everything's fine, it's not fine. And when he says he has an opinion, it's probably a pretty spicy one. The video came out only a few days later on April 15th. What do we think about the video and the song, Dead Stick?
Yeah, well, fucking loved it. Interesting video, kind of, I don't know if we're talking about the video or the song. Maybe the song first. It was sort of a surprise to me because Phantom Island seemed like this highly orchestrated, the single, excuse me, Phantom Island sounded like this highly orchestrated symphonic piece, very like ultra proggy or something, I don't know. And then this single seemed like yacht rock in a really cool way, some Boston style brass, funsy pants, dancey, silly. And I thought, oh, Phantom Island isn't going to be what I thought. It's going to be more of a straight rock album. And of course, my readjusted expectations would be readjusted later. But that's where I was on that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, same. I thought Dead Stick, oh, this is like B741 with horns or something now. Now I'm confused. Right. But it did, I think Dead Stick is the only song from this whole album that kind of straddles that Phantom Island B741 gap. The other ones are just more in that orchestral vein, I think.
It's sort of the odd man out, isn't it? Isn't that song less like all the other songs than all the other songs?
I think it is, yeah. That's interesting. I really hadn't thought about that until now. And the album, I'm sorry, the video is really fun. They're just playing out in a field. It probably where they filmed People Vultures. I don't know. I got that kind of vibe from it. Ambrose dancing around. There's, you know, a very rudimentary built cardboard airplane that it looks like crashed.
It might be more rudimentary than the august standard of cardboard. There's maybe even just paper. And it's a very lo-fi video, kind of a grainy look. And we get the exciting reveal of the lack of Stu's hair, which, oh no, that's not true. I'm sorry. There's an Instagram blurb flip. Storefleet that was released before that, but
right, we don't have a date on that, but I remember someone on social media saying this is my 9/11. People, and this will come, we'll get back to Stu's hair, but this was a sensitive topic for a lot of people. Apparently Stu got lice and had to cut his hair off.
He gets
lice.
We have a relatively good source on that. People do.
And he also seems to get sick when he's around his kids. So, like, let's keep him on tour, please.
The best of our ability. Yes. I don't know if everyone has children out there, but on behalf of both the professor and I think we can vouch that children are disgusting animals. And there's any number of filths that can be transferred to you, and just don't do it without a paper towel or a lot of towels. Hot water, that's what they always do in the movies when a child is coming. One other thing I want to say about Dead Stick and the video is it seemed as if it was pointing towards more of a unified mythology around the idea of crashing into a Phantom Island. Was there a crash? Are they on the Phantom Island now? Is there going to be a unifying theme? And I just thought I'd mention that briefly because I feel confident the answer is no.
I feel confident the answer is whatever the fuck you want it to be.
That's fine. Well, I want the answer to be no for everybody. So can I also have that?
God damn. Oh, boy. I think that the band want to create a unifying theme. No, but I don't think they would have a problem with anyone thinking that there was one or creating a theme within themselves that runs through this. I do. I mean, the album, which leaked on May 12th and was released much later, actually, I think there's certainly a theme running through it.
Yeah, there is. There are themes. I don't know if it's singular.
There are themes.
We have an associate who used to say that a band has gotten when they start to lag in their later years, they start writing exclusively about airports and hotels or something. I don't feel like this is at all a lag, not to spoil what I'm going to say a mere 30 seconds from now. But yeah, but there are certainly themes of touring itself, traveling.
Well, I don't think we can talk about Phantom Island yet because the album didn't come out until after their European residency tour in June. But there was a leak of the entire album on May 12th. And we...
So we shouldn't... If you and I are going to decide to listen to things when they leak, that's fine. But I feel like it would be rude for others who don't want to listen for us to discuss it 10 minutes earlier than we otherwise would be discussing
it. I'm very conflicted about it right now, honestly. Should we talk about Phantom Island in the time that we heard it or at the time it was released? On May 12th, I listened to the entire album for the first time. I remember it vividly. I was lying on my couch having a serotonergic experience. I put it on my speaker system. I listened to it all the way through, and I was shocked, kind of. I was shocked in a way that like Petro and the Silver Chord and B741 did not shock me. And I'm not saying I liked it better. I was just like... We had heard Phantom Island, the song, and we had heard Dead Stick before. And then when I got to the rest of the songs that were new to me, I heard like a musical maturity and emotional depth that I hadn't heard in other albums. And I was just like amazed. And then you called immediately after, somehow, just like by chance, pretty much as soon as I stopped listening to it.
From the belly of the jungle where I long, I fly through time as dead as it is cold. I miss my home, lonely cosmos.
Okay, so we're talking about Phantom Island now.
Fuck it.
It seems. Fine. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry if you were waiting until after we discuss the part of the residency tour. I hate to disappoint you. But yeah, it's amazing. I'm a Beatles guy. I happen to be sort of a Beatles fan. And so I kind of... This George Martin high orchestration thing, it was more like the single for me in a lot of ways. And there's an emotional availability or a vulnerability, an honesty. I think it's the most personal album yet. And... obviously, like deep themes of parenthood for both Stu and Joey, and even Ambie, right, referring to his father,
mm-hmm.
and of course the band strongly hints towards needing a break from touring, which looks like they'll get.
There's a great I don't know if you're familiar with this meme, which is it's from the British sketch comedy show Mitchell and Webb. It's a guy wearing a Nazi uniform and saying, "Are we the baddies?"
Yeah.
And someone posted and said, "Are we the baddies?" Like, as Giz fans, after hearing Phantom Island, as Giz fans wanting them to tour and leave their families temporarily, are we the baddies?
Yeah, I hope that we're doing our best to support a nice lifestyle for them and their families. I'll send them my money, but I want them to come. Bring your family? That's hard. So many new vocal sounds that it took me a while to piece together who was singing what, how the hell they were singing what, except for Cavs. He's out. He had his one moment to sing and on Flight B741, and he did not return to the microphone, though certainly Lucas did.
It's a beautiful album.
I worry which reality she will see. Do it for her, or do it for me?
That's so special.
I'm sorry I missed the orchestra shows. I'm glad. I'm very happy that they were streamed. I probably would have been in tears for some of the songs had I seen them live. Yeah. I mean, we saw one. We saw Aerodynamic live. And that one got to me. So I can't imagine, you know, what Space Sick would do, for example.
Yeah, I was going to go. And then an asshole friend of ours who gave me the name Captain Shipwreck many years ago decided to get married the same weekend as the show that was close to me. So, you know, it's just a terrible man for multiple reasons. And alas, I didn't get to see that either. But yeah, I love this album so much. It's really special to me. And people call it, like they called B741, dad rock, and have continued to do this. And as you said, we're dads and we rock, or at least half of that's true. And yeah, it's just got me right in the feelsy bones. Do you have a favorite song on the album?
It changes every time. Yesterday it was Aerodynamic. Last week it was probably Space Sick.
I think it's Eternal Return for me just because, I don't know, it was the first, I think because it was the first new one I heard, because I loved the Phantom Island single so much, I thought that that was such an incredible new idea for them and yet so gizzy that they had created this very delicate, very intricate designed sound and yet they were still gizzy AF. And I was lamenting maybe that we weren't going to have that when I heard Dead Stick. And then the opening orchestration of Eternal Return is so wild. And then suddenly drops to acoustic guitar. And you go, then you're off on this journey of dozens of different sounds threaded between a really beautiful job by the temporary seventh or however numbereth Giz member, which is really Chad Kelly for this album. As much as I think when people joke about who was a fifth Beatle, of course it's fucking George Martin. I mean, everyone, give me a break. The guy designed so much of what we see as their sound. And I think Chad Kelly deserves a lot of credit for what he did with this work. And with a lot of love, Stu said there were a lot of songs where he said, oh, please, can I have this one? That might have gone on B741. And he said, oh, this one, I have this idea for this one, or I really want to go after. I have so many thoughts about this. And it seems like he really got to be a member of this band for a moment, even if they weren't sitting in the room when he was participating.
Yeah, well, there was the Making of Phantom Island video that got released in June. That was really cool to see. I wonder if they'll work with Chad Kelly again besides the orchestra shows. I kind of wonder if we'll see him again. You think it'd be awesome. What if he worked with them on an electronic album? What would that be like? I don't know.
Oh my God, that'd be so cool.
It would be
amazing with orchestration. It'd be incredible.
Well, yeah, maybe not traditional orchestration. Maybe he's helping write and produce electronic music. I don't know. I think it'd be cool. So that was May 12th, the leak, when that's when I first listened to Phantom Island. The next day, the Grow Wings and Fly music video was released. What the fuck is this? This creeps me out, man. This is hard. I love the song.
Yeah.
The video is so weird and a little tough. I had that thing called tryptophobia where you're afraid of small holes, and so barnacles kind of fuck me up.
Yeah, and then this video rechanged expectations, I believe, about a cohesive mythology surrounding Phantom Island.
Well, Stu wasn't available.
Right. It seems that even if Stu had been available, he was supposed to be the fish. I mean, I don't know that we should have to describe too much to people, but do you want, maybe it's fun to try to describe what is that video about? It does seem to have a cohesive narrative in the video, way that other videos, video. Whether or not you understand what it is, that video has a cohesive narrative. What happens in that video, Dr. Professor?
Dr. Professor, please. You know, I didn't go and spend 4 years of professor school to be called a doctor. So I haven't watched it in a few days, well, because it's very difficult for me. But what happens is Ambrose Fishboy washes up on shore. And then
Ambrose P. Fishman. Wait, that's not true already. We don't know that. We don't know. Is he on shore? We just know that he's there. I mean, and
yeah, he's on the beach. He's coughing.
He's not on the beach yet, I think. And this is important. I understand, but I'm going to stick to this. I want to say from some undisclosed location, and I'm going to circle back to why I think this is important. He is being tended to by a group of, I'm going to say, marine biologists, but we don't really know that. We just know that they are men in wetsuits and they are the boys, minus Ambie, who is a fishman, and Stu.
No Stu.
And they are tending to him. And then they pick him up and they carry him to the beach.
To the beach.
Boy. And then he's very excited. He sees and yells with Stu's voice when he sees the water. And then they save him. They put him back in the water, and Joey holds him lovingly and sings to him
his duckling child.
He squirts ink into Joey's face, Jesus, and mouth, and it's beautiful and upsetting and stupid and heartwarming. And then we are suddenly alone with Ambie in the forest, who is not a fishman, but a fisherman. That's right. You teach a man to fisherman today. And he's fishing hard. Oh, he pulls out a Polaroid. And on the Polaroid is his presumably fishing buddy, who we know doesn't want to fish for fishies. But it's Stu McKenzie, brother to the fisherman. And then he's struggling to catch a fish, and he pulls out the fish, and it's Ambrose P. Fishman, barnacles and all. Now, the reason I was a stickler about the beginning part is I don't know if this is a flashback or a flash forward. Mm. Has Ambie P. Fishman been saved and then caught by Ambie Fishman? Or is this how Ambrose P. Fishman ends up in the forest, only to be saved by the marine biologists?
I think the important part is that it doesn't matter.
That's the key.
Yeah. It was fun to watch people trying to dissect this on the internet. I didn't really participate.
Dissect sounds gross.
People looking for how does this relate to other albums and other videos? I don't fucking think it does or has to. It can if you want it to, everybody.
I'm just asking, how does the second half of the video relate to the first half?
I don't know that it does, man.
It's esoteric.
This is
the
theme.
It's worth pointing out that Stu then appears as a force ghost at the very end of the video, leading to some fascinating online theories about whether Stu has died or is no longer a member of the band. And I'm mostly not upset, mostly by the end of the video. I can kind of handle that Ambie looks pretty gross. But the video finishes with a close-up of his slow-breathing gills as he maybe suffocates to death in the open air. And that is truly upsetting and a terrible way to end a video, in my opinion. It's not a nice feeling, but I kind of love the video, and it's such a fucking good song.
That's a wonderful song. It's beautiful, and this one gets me. The last final lyrics, especially, "Catch me in the summer rain, dancing with my tongue out," sung by Ambrose. Just beautiful. And I really, on Phantom Island, the album, I think Ambrose really becomes emotionally mature in his lyrics. Singing about, like you said, his father, singing about self-doubt. I think our baby's growing up.
It's beautiful. The lyrics of this song are beautiful. The lyrics on the album are beautiful. song. And of course, I think we'd be remiss not pointing out the obvious that this song has been around in some form as part of the extended jam from Butterfly 3000 and from Shanghai. And we heard little bits and pieces of the lyrics over time. And so I think it was a very sweet gift to the community at large to make it into a song. And of course, to open with the refrain, Bye Bye Shanghai, at the beginning of the video.
Yeah, I remember seeing a discussion about someone complaining that this is not a new song. And just fuck off. It's fine.
Yeah, right.
And on May 18th, a few days later, after the Grow Wings and Fly music video, Kiss started their European residency tour, which was in 5 cities. We haven't talked about this, really. We can talk about it a little bit. This was a cool tour. I happened to be not working for most of this, and they were playing at night and streaming this. This lined up perfectly. I watched all of these shows live. Very lucky timing. And Lisbon, Barcelona, Vilnius, Athens, Plovdiv.
Impressive.
Starting in Lisbon, all of these venues were awesome. And I think that was part of the point. Stu said that one of the goals of this residency tour, 3 shows in each city, one of the goals was to just play in cool places.
Yeah, they achieved it.
They started in Lisbon, which was the only indoor show of this residency tour. And
that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, not right away, but during the first night, Stu shaves his head during Self-Immolate.
And just one of the epic moments in the history of this band's stage antics, I think.
It's so epic that I have a t-shirt of him shaving his head in that show. I really like that shirt.
Yeah, there was a lot of like online, as you said, someone said it was their 9/11 when he shaved his head. And then we saw Instagram clips that his hair was growing back. And if anyone is allowed to assert or affix their own narrative to the lyrics of King Giz or their music, then maybe the antics as well. It seemed to me, and I have no right to assert this, that this was Stu's response to everyone having feelings about his hair, which is, fuck you, how do you like my fucking hair now, assholes?
That was certainly my interpretation. During a drum solo in Self-Immolate, I don't know where they came from, Stu gets clippers and starts clipping his hair. Then he has an audience member help clipping his hair in a very haphazard way. And that haircut stuck. He didn't even trim the back. So basically, the top of his head is maybe a quarter inch, and the back is still an inch long for the rest of the tour. As a way of saying, I don't give a fuck how I look or how you think I look.
Immediately reminded me of some friends I have who let their 6-year-old cut her own hair. And yeah, you can imagine how that looks. And Stu looked a little like that. It was like kind of cool, but also like didn't seem like very like healthy or well adjusted. But certainly not a look that someone else at the party might also have. So that's very fucking cool in that way.
The next night, the second night in Lisbon, May 19th, no haircuts were involved as far as I remember. There was a really cool Iron Lung that happened that with a hypertension intro and hypertension teases throughout it.
Yeah, and the hair sticks, and he still has his amazing haircut. Honorable mention to Sylvia and David providing the vocal intro to Nuclear Fusion.
David and Sylvia, everybody.
No!
Did a particularly nice job as a couple.
They said they had been rehearsing it.
It showed. It was wonderful. She was asked on stage, and in a sign of prophetic overindulgence that will continue for Giz towards their crowd, she says, after being pulled on stage and slowly getting on stage, she says, "I have another friend I'd like to bring on stage, can I?" And Joey says, "Yeah, why not? Bring everyone up here."
Oh, man. How long
in combination of saying, "How can you ask this?" and also, "Fuck, do I care?" Sure. Yeah. What else are we doing?
Oh, let's get on stage. Let's maybe you and I should make that happen.
Great idea.
I mean, fuck, whatever. Come on up.
Yeah. What's the syndrome? Main character syndrome. I want that. I am the main character in your movie, not my own, unfortunately, but in yours.
There's some truth to that. The next maybe. Night. Well, the last night in Lisbon featured an amazing river. This was the highlight for me of this run, besides the haircut, I guess. It had some... did you catch the AC/DC Thunderstruck teases happening?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
Daily Blue totally. Teases. Which
becomes more common. They do that now sometimes. They did it a bunch at orchestra shows even.
You got to think they grew up with AC/DC.
Of course they did. I think obviously they did. In fact, AC/DC will keep coming up. The return of the all-new Baby Nathan, who was not in the first two. And I think that's worth pointing out because we didn't see Nathan in the rock shows, I guess we'll talk about later, in Australia. But it is possible that just because Nathan's not in a rock show doesn't mean Nathan is no longer in rock shows. Right? I keep telling myself that. That's true, right? Right, dude? Right?
It's true. And it was because we haven't seen, when I was reviewing this European footage, we haven't seen Nathan in December when they were in Australia. It was really nice. It was nice to see Nathan again.
European footage sounds like everybody's naked.
head naked, shaved.
Head naked. That's what I meant.
Definitely what you meant. They then went on to Barcelona, which looked like a really cool venue. It looked like a town square of some kind.
Yeah. I've got second night thoughts. Do you have first night thoughts?
First night, I thought, had a really cool Gilgamesh. This is when we get, I think, our first and maybe last Gilga fucking Mesh lyrics.
I just was replaying that in preparation for our discussion today, and my 9, almost 10-year-old was really delighted by that addition throughout this version.
I really think so. My 8-year-old is like genuinely into Giz now, and I think part of the reason is the bad words.
Yeah, mine too.
That's incredible. It's like she
I mean,
now...
my bad words too. I think it's also one of the things she likes about me.
Oh, she might. she actually wants a Giz poster, and I really think it's all revolving around bad words. Night 2 in Barcelona.
Yeah, Odd Life stuck out for me, not having been played for 114 shows, introduced as Cookie's favorite Giz song. And I hope they keep playing it. It's a wonderful Cookie song because it's very Cookie forward synth. And I know that the Giz community lost a friend later in the year during this song. And so, I hope we get to return to this song. I think it's like a tender song for us now, but it was like it was just re-entering rotation. And so I hope that that's something that we continue to get in the future, though I understand it's complicated.
In this show, Second Night of Barcelona, there was the longest I'm Not in Your Mind ever, at least to that point. It was weird. Major key synthy jams and Thea quotes, like vocal Thea quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
The third and last night at Barcelona, I thought Magenta Mountain was really cool.
Yeah. I liked the harmonica guitar dueling between Ambi and Joey. We'll get some more of that later. There's a ZZ Top LaGrange tease in the jam. It's fucking awesome.
And that was the last show in Barcelona, but not the last event in Barcelona, because there was an after party that I think most of the band went to.
Talking about them polar bears, Cookie? Oh, yeah.
Wait, you hear that sound? That means it's time for Cookie Watch. Cookie Watch is, of course, a registered trademark of Kraft Nabisco, a wholly owned subsidiary of Mondelez.
It's Mondelez, please, not Mondelez.
Mondelez Industries, which is, a snacking powerhouse based in Chicago, Illinois. This after party in Barcelona was unhinged. Oh, well, I think we know a couple people that were there, much drinking. The band was basically DJing, and at one point, Ambrose and Cookie sang Eddie Murphy's epic party tune, Party All the Time. That was Cookie singing with Ambrose there.
That's wonderful. The tequila drinking seemed to start before the end of the show, even with Ambi passing a bottle of tequila, maybe Patron, back and forth with Joey already before they even got to the party. My God. Once again, I'm not sure if that is what I would pick to drink absurd amounts of white liquor. I'm not a white liquor man. Clear liquor, they call it. White liquor is like, I don't know, Malibu or something, I guess. But yeah, might be better. No, that also sounds awful.
Yeah, cooked Craig.
They had 3 days to rest before Vilnius, Lithuania. Very cool venue, an old prison. The yard of an old prison. Love this.
Yeah, this was my favorite venue of this tour, even though there were some special venues of this tour. But it was just so fucking badass and epic. And every time I look at the footage, it just seems impossible. It just looks like a movie set. It's the wildest thing to see them in such a, like, archetypal, gnarly prison space.
Yeah, Shawshank Gizdemption.
That's what they called it.
First night had a really cool sad pilot. Very long, the longest to date. And then a pretty... Oh, the sad pilot had some hot water teases. There was an incredible slow jam that was the debut of a Nathan slow jam one.
Night to this, speaking of AC/DC, there's this wonderful extended Jailbreak impromptu, maybe, jam? Wasn't
Gotta
on
be.
The written
Gotta
set
be.
List. But that was just delightful. We should talk about the end of night two, though. We have an interesting phenomenon of the mind of probably mostly Stu McKenzie, which is that they are supposed to play their Crumbling Castle Fourth Color pairing, but run out of time to play the Fourth Color. So as per McKenzian law, the world cannot go on until the suite is complete. And they have to open the next night with the Fourth Color to finish the previous night's work.
It sounds like a tough way to open a show, just because it kicks off. Yeah. Is it a suite if it's just two songs?
If you ask nicely.
All right. We're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday.
Yeah.
This, yeah, Night 3 was pretty wild. This was, we had Pink Soup, we had Evel Knievel, we had Ignis in Night 3.
Yeah, right. It was Pink Suit Festival.
It certainly was.
Or was it Pink Soup Festival? We're not Lots sure of pink, which.
Pink jumpsuits. I thought it was, the highlight for me was Ignis coming on stage to play Dragon. On Stu's guitar. Specifically, he asked if he could play Dragon on Stu's guitar. Not an easy song to play. Stu was very accommodating. And I just like, anytime we get to see Stu without an instrument, he goes wild. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He grabbed the flute for a while to swing it around.
Why the flute? He doesn't play it. Oh my God, he's going to play the flute on Dragon. Nope, he's going to direct the audience like an orchestra while holding his flute. He crowd surfs for a while. And more incredible evidence of the, not the only evidence in this episode of incredible indulgence of their audience. Can I just say about the Beach Boys? I really don't like beats either. And I'm happy for the fine people of Lithuania, but man, I don't need this beet soup. But they said it's the best thing they ever put in their mouth. So that's nice. But you can go try that for me and tell me how it is. What happens during Larisk here? Is this not when we get Evel Knievel on stage?
Yes. Evel Knievel, a man, local man dressed as Evel Knievel, came on stage. Did they invite him up there?
Yeah, I think so. Speaking of incredible overindulgence of the crowd.
Yeah, and it's...
Sure, come on up.
I got the impression that Ambrose was uncomfortable with this after a while. And maybe they thought Evel was going to just jump off the stage in perfect Evel Knievel fashion.
Do you think I wonder if he was really going to jump, if we really thought he was going to jump. It seemed too obvious, or if it's just like, I don't know, when you're like up on a cliff and it's scary because you can't help but think about jumping, mm-hmm. even though you would never do it. But it's scary because it makes you think about jumping. That when you see a man in an Evel Knievel costume and helmet standing in front of an audience, you just have to think he has to think that he has to jump.
You have to think that he has to think that he has to jump. I agree.
You have to.
Are we taking too much time on Europe? I can't tell.
I don't know. Let's find out.
Because we're not going to talk about the other. We covered the later tours in more depth before, but this is not.
That's right.
We have not.
That's okay. I do want to say that here in between there, we get an official bootleg release of Caverns 23.
Oh boy.
On June 1st. We don't have to go into it. Go listen. It's awesome. I wasn't there or anything, but I just thought it's a cool way to mention Carter Tate's documentary Grow Wings and Fly, featuring she and Michaela Guthrie following the band around on the 23 tour. We see her a lot still, right in the whatever, yeah. The pre-pit in the
photo
press
pit,
area.
Yeah, for sure.
The photo pit, taking pictures of the band. And it's a fun little documentary, and much of it spends time around this epic fucking show that happened in 23. And so it was a nice release for the crowd.
I remember seeing them at Rimlicker Farms in 23.
Mm.
Yeah.
Delicious. Mm. I mean, delightful.
Rimlicker. That was June 1st. June 3rd, the Making of Phantom Island music video came out on YouTube, which was adorable. We got a few more hints of music, but mostly saw not backstage, but studio stuff. A lot of unzipping of jumpsuits. some discussions about Yahoo Sirius.
Yeah, that's right. And another important icon in Australian rock history.
And then June 4th began the Athens residency show. This was a fucking crazy venue. Up like...
Sure was. Top of the world, Ma.
Yeah, the top of a rocky mountain high.
Feels like a place you go to visit Greek gods.
But it wasn't, you know, Greek. It wasn't ancient Greek in architecture. It made me nervous that people were up that high while being up that high.
It's exactly. Yeah, totally. That's not one of those two things is safe, but not both.
Night one, June 4th, had a pretty cool Boogeyman Sam, mm-hmm. up-tempo and kind of evil-sounding. There was a Black Market Bargain lyrics in it, mm-hmm. which I think at the time no one had a name for. We later learned the name of Black Market Bargain.
Right, from a set list on the Rave Tour.
Night 2, incredible Iron Lung. It had Phantom Island quotes in it. There was an Open Water jam that I heard, at least the drums of Open Water, and then, yeah, Phantom Island stuff. This was intense.
You know what Stu knows that Joey likes is Mixolydian-based jams.
Is that right?
He says so.
Now, what's Mixolydian?
Oh, man. It's the perf mode.
The way I do Mixolydian is a major scale with a flat 7.
Oh, that's how you do it, huh?
Yeah. How do you do it?
I just start from the modal place in the scale and work my way south.
What number north. Is it again? What mode?
That's right. I stand by my statement.
Excellent. Night 3, Last Night in Athens, awesome Thea, a rock version of Thea, maybe with some Land Before Time Land and Iron Lung stuff going on in it. I mean, definitely Iron Lung. I don't know, Land Before Time Land jam.
Yeah, right. That's what I've got. And then can we go to Bulgaria?
There's also a really good Ice 5 on the Last Night in Athens. But yes, let's go to Plovdiv, Bulgaria.
Oh, very cool venue. Yes, you said it right, I guess. Or at least I'm impressed that you tried to say it. I've only ever heard it in my head. And it didn't
this was
like
an
that.
Ancient-looking venue. Roman, I believe.
Wild. Yeah, crazy old. It was arguably the craziest venue, but I felt uncomfortable there. It looked dangerous. There was no pit, really. There was a pit. And there could have been quite a pit if anyone had made a false move towards the top of the crowd. It seems like everyone would have tumbled down into the pit.
No railing.
So I'd be afraid to dance there. Really, no railings anywhere. There should definitely be railings. I wouldn't have danced hard there, though one man did, upside down and backwards. Looking like Stu in the Silver Cord video, as they noticed kindly.
Yeah, you remind me of me. You remind me of Acid.
He looks like you. Yeah, he does. You know what happened not long after that? Should we talk about the Phantom Island album?
Phantom Island? Have we talked about Phantom Island yet?
June 13th, there was a surprise to the world.
The Phantom Island album got released. Old news for us. Us leakage lickers.
No, I do feel bad.
That was the day that they were supposed to play Bonnaroo.
Which they sure as hell didn't do.
Which they didn't, because Bonnaroo got rained the fuck out. I feel so bad for everyone. I mean, I feel wet and bad. That's a real bummer, because they were going to do 3 shows there. And maybe a marathon?
And some people saw them around Tennessee, but then they went home. You made a stray comment, Professor, that haunted me. Because they were very outspoken about how much our country sucks, and good on them, because it does. They're like, oh my God, they're not going to let them in the country, are they? And I know that didn't seem that realistic, but I some secret part of me was scared, and I was excited to see the guys in country, but then I didn't, which was upsetting to me. And God, is it going to... I don't know, maybe this goes in our preview of the world ahead or the years ahead, but... Our country sucks so bad. I'm so scared for the day that Stu says enough is enough and doesn't want to give money to our fucking terrible, terrible economy.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think
that's good.
We might not have an economy before he says that.
Well, that's better.
God.
Can I still go to the shows?
I'm sorry about the Bonnaroo people. And yes, there was evidence that the band was at least in the U.S. legally, we think. There was a gap. I assume, you know, that they went back to Australia, because they didn't come back to the U.S. until July. But there was, on July 25th, the release of Demos Volume 7 and 8, which is really cool. The description says it's demos from the band's entire career. I don't know if that's true. There's a bunch of stuff that would show up on Changes. We have some Hell demos. What do you like from this?
Yeah, those are all my, I mean, the Help demo is my favorite. I think it's fantastic. Nothing is entire to everything except everything itself, but it does span quite a bit of time, and I think it's delightful. I love all these demos, which are, I don't know, you put those down as official bootleg releases because they get released by Bootleg Gizzard, but this is an interesting offering because it accompanies their leaving Spotify. I think it happens the day of or the day after as sort of a gift to all of those who can go listen some the fuck place other than Spotify, because on the same day that they release this on Bandcamp and on other venues, they make their announcement that they're leaving Spotify because Spotify sucks and is giving significant money to AI weapons research.
Or at least the CEO is.
Or, well, right, but the CEO seemed to be giving proceeds from Spotify. At least the impression I got is that it was like a, you know, company investment, that there was a pretty straight line from your money to Skynet that Stu didn't want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm glad they're off of it. My money still goes to that research, but through taxes, not through Spotify.
And then in the weeks after, or even the week after, Giz offering all of their albums on Bandcamp for pay what you want become the 27 most popular albums on Bandcamp.
You're telling me that free albums became popular?
There are lots of free albums on Bandcamp.
Are there? Yeah.
But they literally dominated the chart in every possible way. And
still do, I believe.
And you can give money. And I have I still listen through YouTube Music to their regular albums. But I do buy bootlegs through Bandcamp sometimes. And there are certain Fridays a year. I think it's one Friday a month. All of the money goes to the band. They call Bandcamp Fridays, which they're continuing in 2026. So I do buy albums from there and give money to Giz that way to thank them for their hard work. And otherwise, I've been doing YouTube Premium with YouTube Music. I'm paying $22.95 a month for up to six people. Oh. For the family plan,
all right.
Which is great. And so, I don't know, if you're looking for a way to handle it, you can do that and also still give money through Bootleg Gizzard if you want through Bandcamp, or just mail them checks.
Mail them checks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, to the address in the show notes, which oddly, you'll notice, is addressed to Captain Shipwreck. Mm-hmm. Via an undisclosed city in America, but I promise I'll give it to them.
The Grim Reaper caches the Czech Republic. Then began the U.S. the U.S. Phantom Island tour began on July 28th in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We weren't sure what this was going to be like, and of course it was awesome. I remember watching a few like live Instagram feeds since this was not broadcast. It was very exciting to watch this shit. Philadelphia, followed by New Haven, Connecticut, and then two shows at Forest Hills, an orchestra show and a rock show, and both of those were broadcast. Very excited to see the orchestra show, and the sound was all fucked up during the live stream. It has since been fixed and is on YouTube, and it's awesome, but that was tough.
Yeah, it's much better now.
Yeah, Stu fixed it.
We love everyone very much.
Oh, that sound means it's time for Stu's Feet Meat Beat. Stu's Feet Meat Beat is, of course, where we cover Stu's feet. I
mean, shoes, stewed feet.
It was during
shoes,
the
stewed feet.
stewed feet. Maybe that's a better name for it.
Soup. Yeah.
It was during Crumbling Castle that Stu began slowly undressing his feet.
Crumbling, crumbling, crumbling castle.
Shoes first. Yeah, he remained in socks for a while, and then by the end of Crumbling Castle, he was barefoot. And for the rest of the show, he was also wearing what I would call a business romper, a women's business romper, which was a kind of green one-piece jumpsuit made of look like rayon with black lapels.
Cheers, cats.
Yeah, the first orchestra show that they play, we don't hear much the first two. We get little bits, snippets off of the Instagrams, but the one in New York is not an official bootleg or something. I don't know. It's not up as an official bootleg, but the band has released it on YouTube. We get an established format that they're going to stick to for the 17 orchestra shows that they play. Maybe, I mean, probably, I don't know, forever. Sean O'Loughlin composes scores for the latter half, which will always be the River Crumbling Castle, this thing, Mars for the Rich, Dragon, and Iron Lung. So in addition to Chad Kelly's scores existing already, Mr. O'Loughlin has composed these other scores. Sarah Hicks joins the band for the American tour only. And these songs will not be played outside of the orchestra shows for the rest of 2025.
Oh, the post-intermission songs.
Well, right. Any of them with the exception of Aerodynamic, which we'll may or may not get to.
Right. Yeah, cool. And they, of course, they continue that format into Australia later in the year. The next night at Forest Hills was also broadcast, and this was a rock, do we call them rock shows if they still have Nathan? Sure. It was a traditional show.
Of course.
Had a really cool extinction in it. I really like that. I had a couple friends that were at this show. This was their first Giz show. I was very curious to hear their experience because they're kind of like, they're into like, I know they're really into Krungman and Phish. And they were surprised that people weren't dancing. And that was interesting, an interesting note from them. And maybe they don't consider moshing dancing. Maybe we've had this experience at Field of Vision where we felt like we were dancing more than most people.
Am I dancing right now? Can you tell me, do I look like I'm dancing right now?
Which
I feel
cardio?
Like I'm dancing more than other people right now.
You might be. This was the last, you know, traditional non-orchestra show until Field of Vision. August 4th was orchestra in Maryland, followed by near Chicago, Colorado Springs, Los Angeles, and San Diego on August 11th.
None of these shows are officially streamed, though there are some fan streams available. As usual, only the Forest Hills show is officially streamed. I also want to point out about that Forest Hills rock, quote unquote, show that Nathan travels to New York for just one show, which I just find interesting, the rules by which we can or cannot predict when Nathan will appear on stage are hard to crack.
Yeah, can't crack those rules.
Can't crack them. Can't fathom the cracking.
August 15th started Field of Vision, the greatest music festival that ever existed.
Yeah, so far, the greatest musical experience perhaps the world has ever known to date occurred over a three-day period in Barna Vista, Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Your pronunciation is getting much better.
I've been practicing. I live in the region. That's as much as I'll say.
You better get out of there.
Run. Oh, my God. They see me.
Buena Vista. We've talked about this in depth in our inaugural unofficial King Gizzard podcast episode. It was wonderful. Each night for me was better than the last.
Yeah.
Including the post-third night jam session at the Timeland stage. It just got, the whole thing just got better and better. And I'm I might go to the next one, the next field of vision.
I might see there. I might even drive you from an airport somewhere in the vicinity.
That'd be great. In the region, as they say.
They do. Just there, though. They only say region in that region. It's recursive.
Yeah, I say,
like, release.
If you want to hear more about Field of Vision or too much about Field of Vision, check out our Field of Vision episode.
Yeah, we could go on and on about it. We could spend a whole episode just on that. So let's have posthumously done that.
And then the band went home, presumably, for a while.
They did. Stu got back to the remastering table, or the rebootlegging, the bootlicking table, and released Red Rocks 23 and Rimlicking Farms 23, just for the professor as well.
Yes. In September, they released the Red Rocks 23 and Rimlicking Farms 23. These are great. Wow. These are so
prime candidates for future episodes of this podcast, perhaps.
I think so. I think we need to cover each of these in their own 90 minutes.
October 21st, 2025, the least important date in King Gizzard history, marks the first episode of the unofficial King Gizzard podcast.
A day that will live in infamy, if it lives at all.
If it did. What day again? No, never mind.
Yeah,
October 24th, however.
Surprise.
2025, we have a sweet surprise.
The Melbourne Rave Show. Giz was Melbourne. Getting ready. What? Melbourne?
Nothing. Melbourne. I didn't say anything. You did.
You are. They were getting ready for their European rave / orchestra show that was going to start on October 31st. And then a week before-ish, they said, we're going to do a free show in Melbourne, in our hometown. There were about 10,000 people there in the kind of a town square thing. This was a cool preview of the upcoming tour, I thought. I really enjoyed this.
First show in Australia in like a year and a half or something. And then like that was the only show that after a year before that. So they hadn't played in Australia since 24, and they only played there once in 24.
God.
And only played there in July of 23 before that. So, yeah, I feel like their homecoming in earnest, you have to consider to be the Australian tour that comes later, but this is a little preview of that. And it's, I think now that we've seen the European rave tour, it does seem like sort of a practice show.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing with some ideas that are much more fully developed later.
And then a few days later, they're in Manchester.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. A bunch of rave shows, a bunch of orchestra shows in Europe. We covered all this in two episodes of this podcast in depth, going through, almost each song of the rave show, of the rave tour.
Yeah.
I think we talked about like every song. And there are clips of almost every song in the episodes. What do you think of this tour? I call it a rave tour because the orchestra stuff wasn't really much different, although there were some really cool intermission jams. But looking at the rave tour part, what do you think about this now that we've had a couple months?
Well, I guess before focusing on the rave tour part, I want to say, including the orchestra show aspects of it, that this is an utterly unique type of tour that I think we can say, combining these two elements, literally no one has ever done anything like this. Highly orchestrated prog rock combined with a bunch of techno rave shows. So that's pretty fucking crazy.
What do you think was like for them? Like, I'm not a musician. You play more music live than I do. What the fuck? How does a band do this emotionally?
I don't know. The orchestra show almost seemed like having a day job while you go out and do drugs all night or something. but I can't imagine. But then the rave shows are amazing. I mean, I don't know how much of that will happen. I know they do have a rave show scheduled for New York next year, but they're just weird and highly creative. And I don't listen to a lot of that sort of music. And so I don't have a great framework to compare it to what other Dead Mice or the like are out there doing. But this blew my mind, and I thought that they were developing something very special that I do think we'll see more of in some way, whether it's as an album, whether there are more rave shows, or whether it just like informs a broader sense of their music sensibility.
Yeah, the juxtaposition of orchestra and rave on the same tour is, I mean, like you said, highlights their diversity, their creativity, their insanity.
Schizophrenia.
Exactly. We're going to do some weird shit, some confusing stuff. The rave shows, I really enjoyed them. And I kind of thought that I would mostly forget about them because I'm a rock boy. We were rock dads. And I also didn't grow up listening to Brothers Chemical or Chemical Brothers or, you know,
either
Aphex Twin or Aphex Only Child. But goddamn, I have been re-listening to these shows, and I'm not picking one out specifically. I just find one that looks convenient, and I put it on, and it is really good. And boy, does my wife not like this. This is not good for her.
I will say, and I know that you did some home jazzercise to these shows.
I did.
It really seems like, as much as I enjoyed it, like also you had to be there. Like, you didn't have to be there, but you had to be there. It seems like it was a very special thing to be present for, that to be in the heart of this and sweating for whatever number of reasons and breathing heavy already and enjoying this seems to have just been the ultimate way to fulfill this sublime experience.
I would have loved to have been there, and maybe there will be more, as you've said. We'll see. They're so crazy. They're so crazy, this band. Oh, I love them.
I also would love to have been there. It seems to have been an extraordinary time for everyone who went, and I'm jealous.
After this tour, we got Mango Sticky Rice, which we've talked about a bit. This is on the bootleg Bandcamp. Stu's generative music experiment, create the paper plane and throw it and see what happens.
He says. It
goes in the wind.
It's cool, but it's sort of an oddity. I don't think this is going to become my most listened to album. My wife very much wants to dance to it. She feels like a lot of contemporary dance pieces would go nicely to this. I'm not going to be doing that too much because my light warmers are still at the dry cleaner, and I think there may be something going on there. But it's a fun, fascinating little piece.
And then the Australian tour began. Well, actually, the same day that Mango Sticky Rice came out on December 2nd. Sydney, two orchestra shows at the Sydney Opera House, which looks smaller inside than I was expecting.
Yeah, right. These are funny little shows. Australia is big on the outside, but little on the inside, it seems. And a lot of these venues are like that. Nice homecoming. I'm glad they got a bunch of shows strung together. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they spend any time there in the future, in the years to come.
Playing, you mean? Because they're there.
Playing. They're there. Presumably they're there. I'm so glad they live in the same town.
They're there. Hopefully they're enjoying their families, and hopefully they're getting sick of them, so they want to go on a big tour in 2027. Oh, that's a long time from now. Of course, we talked in two episodes about the whole Australian tour stuff. Any other takeaways from the Australian stuff? I think it was great for the Australian fans to get them again. I know there was a lot of hunger. Or there was a lot of hunger amongst a small group of people, it seems, because they miss Giz. And they had not played Australia, like you said, for a year and a half since before B741 came out. That's a long time.
It is. It is a long time. I don't have a whole lot else to say. It was nice to see them at home. I felt like I was kind of looking for cues about like their attitude or their bearing or their like carriage at home. Do they seem different at home? Do they seem a little bit like more relaxed or a little bit more punk? And I kind of thought so in a way, like they felt like they were with their people and I don't know, had like a slightly more relaxed attitude.
I think you're right.
And
there's a lot of banter.
It's fun to see that side of them. Yeah.
There's a lot of just silliness, backflip guy.
Yeah. Do you want to briefly talk about 2026? What do you think? What do we have to look forward to?
So 2026, I assume we're going to get an album. This is early January now. I assume we're going to get an album in the next 3 months. I hope that. But they seem to like to release albums the day they play a show or the day they start a tour even. Petro was released on the first day of Rimlicker. Phantom Island was released on the first day of the European residency tour. That'd be tough to wait until, what, August?
I wrote down four questions about 2026.
I know the four questions.
Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. The youngest child asks, will there be more than just two American residency events anywhere in the world over the course of 2026? What do you think? Asks two.
I do know that on the official promo video for Field of Vision, which came out last week, they said the only U.S. shows that Forest Hills and Field of Vision... No, it said Field of Vision will be one of only two U.S. shows in 2026.
Right.
So that doesn't answer the question.
Yep. Does not.
At the end of the Australian tour, Ambrose said, we'll see you in 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
Well, we're not playing for 6 to 8 months. Like I said a few weeks ago, I think the only places they would play, since they just did Europe, Australia, and US, are South America and Japan, potentially. But they would have to announce those things pretty soon.
That would be helpful. You know, my my 50th birthday is coming up, and my family's giving me some space, some grace around like what I want to do. And I'm like, I don't know if I should do anything, but it just occurred to me like, God, that'd be cool if they would let me know, if Giz would let me know where they're going to be around that time. It'd be incredible to travel to some wild venue. I'd be fucking happy to go to Australia in June. I bet it's cool there then, both literally and figuratively. And so we'll see. Okay, so we don't know. The answer is who fucking knows. The other question too, you sort of half started to answer. How many albums will we get in 2026?
One.
Ten.
No, oh, sorry, ten. Right.
Ten.
They didn't say it would be Nathan 10 in 2026.
Wrong. Incorrect. I'm sorry. These. You should next time phone a friend first and call me. And
Joey didn't say 10 in 1 year. He said 10.
No, he didn't. He did. 10,
I honestly think
10 Nathan and albums.
I honestly think it's going to be one. And, you know, we know that how prolific they are. It could be three in a year, especially if they're not touring at all. But I feel like they just have other priorities and they want to do family stuff. And God bless them. They've earned it.
How many genres will we receive or receive anew in 2026?
It will either be one new genre or 57 combined, which would be one
deal.
New.
And then I have a minor secondary question, which is, will Phantom Island songs make it into regular rotation?
Yes.
Fuck yes. Great news. You heard it here first, folks.
Aerodynamic already has.
Yes.
Grow Wings and Fly kind of has.
Already kind of was.
Yeah. Dead Stick might work.
Seems easy.
Yeah. The horns are cool, are an important part of Dead Stick, especially ashing your cigarette into a saxophone. But they do have a saxophone.
They do have a saxophone, and it does seem if Cookie can play Stu's flute parts on the synth, then who knows what else is possible for other elements of orchestration.
Phantom Island Nathan album. Just do the whole Phantom Island on Nathan.
I would love that. I loved you when you mentioned with Chad Kelly the idea that, I don't know, there could be orchestration and also electronic. I don't know that there's any real reason to believe that's going to happen, but that would be cool. And I would just like to point out again what my favorite thing is. One of the things that I learned over the course of this incredible packed year. It's really true. And I you mentioned it to me, and I didn't really think about it until you said it, until you started to pitch the idea of this year in review show. It's amazing how much has happened. And so much of external judgment of what Giz is in their proliferationisticism as a nation is their production of albums in short periods of time. But having only released one album this year, it's incredible how much they did this year. And what I have found I like most in a show is just all of it. Just give me all of it. I like all of it in a single show. And the rave shows I thought got cooler and cooler because they were doing more and more shit. They started adding more other instruments, adding guitar back in and adding more elements back in. I wanted to fucking hear the harmonica in the rave shows. I like that they can do everything.
Yeah.
And I want it all in one show. They do.
And it's true. To judging King Gizzard, looking at 2025 and judging 2025 on previous standards or metrics, which were album releases, it's like, oh, that's just one album. But no, no, no. This was an orchestra album with orchestra tours, rave tours, rock shows, their first festival, including marathon, three marathon shows in a row, which has never happened before. This was a monstrous year, which was hugely diverse, even though there was only one album. And I mean, this year inspired us to talk about them, mostly their live shows, because they're incredible.
Yeah, that's right.
I honestly think this
lucky time to be a Giz fan.
Yeah. 2026. Huh. Interesting.
Hot damn.
2026 might be bringing some heat too.
Wow.
Yes.
I think this was a huge year for them. They grew wings and flew. Let's talk about what we want to do next, since there are no shows to talk about and there are no albums.
I know what I want to do. I know what I want to do, and you and I already talked about it extensively, so why don't you surprise me?
Shut up. We want to talk about Chunky Shrapnel, the movie. Mm-hmm. So Chunky Shrapnel is an album, but it's also a documentary that was released in April 2020, which if you remember, some of our fans are very young and might not have been alive in April of 2020. But that was April 2020 was a crazy time in the world. The pandemic was just starting. And so this film had a weird release. There was one release in 2021, and then it came back in December 2022. This is a Giz, you know, concert film about a European tour that happened in 2019. And it is wild and fun. There's a lot of footage from shows. There's a lot of backstage stuff. There's music that would show up on albums later that Stu was composing. And we want to talk about this movie. And you, I mean, I'm going to put two links in the description for this episode. Two links that actually go to the video. It's really hard to find. There's not a good release of it. The two links, one link you can watch on a mobile phone, but the audio is really quiet. And the other link you cannot watch on a mobile phone. You can watch on a desktop or laptop or whatever, but the audio is much better. So choose whichever works for you. It's cool. It's a cool document.
It is. Listen to the album too, maybe. I think that the album is weird and quite different than the movie, but also is a neat thing. We'll talk more about why, but if you want to, that's easier to find.
But watch it. But also watch it.
But also watch the album.
Yeah, watch the album.
Listen to the movie.
You listen to the movie and watch the album. And
watch it.
Taste it. So get those links, watch it. It's going to be a little film episode. Omnium Gatherum.
Oh yeah. Omnium Gatherum. I have been playing or watching my son play with his gift from Mr. Santa Claus of a Korg monologue.
Korg?
Which is Korg.
Does it have an umlaut?
In my heart it does.
Your heart has an umlaut. Hurt. Yes,
in my heart. Kurg has many umlauts. There's an umlaut button on it. Is this cool synth? I've never really played with a synth like this. What did we decide to call it? A synth sequencer and something? Just a cool toy. I found one used for still a slightly offensive price. They're 500 new.
What's the name
I'm
of
paying
it?
That. The monologue.
Korg monologue?
What a cool thing if you want to have some sort of synthy thing to play right out of the box. My son has been able to play it immediately. He is not yet 10 years old and already makes some very fucking cool sounds with it. I'm enjoying listening to him play that more than I enjoy some of the other sounds he makes on some of the other instruments he has in the house. And I would be looking forward and was looking forward to getting a chance to play with it too, but I don't know if he'll let me. Because he has taken ownership of it immediately and profoundly, and that's been really cool to see.
It looks really fun, and I should come visit you just to play with it.
Yeah, it's got a very, like, intro to Nathaniel kind of air to it, and I think the boy immediately recognized that, and we've been calling it Baby Nathan.
I was wondering if you had a name. Okay, Baby Nathan. Beautiful. Yeah,
it is beautiful. What about you?
I don't have a product recommendation or anything, but I recently spent the week in New York City with the band Phish. And I know I would like to encourage people not to prejudge the band based on their fans or like hippie culture, because in New York, it ain't a hippie culture thing. Every year they play at Madison Square Garden leading up to New Year's, three shows and then a fourth New Year's that has some sort of like theatrical element. And I want to thank the band for hiring dozens or maybe as many as 100 Broadway professionals to earn a really nice paycheck on New Year's Eve in Madison Square Garden. They do this every year. It might be a money loser for them, this show, every year. This year, there was a very diverse cast of modern dancers, actors, puppeteers, culminating in a show that was ice cream themed and featured people dancing as spilled milk, ice cream men, cows, a rocket pop that shot sparks and flew up into the air on during the countdown. It was just awesome, and they're just a fun band. Musically, I don't think musically they have a lot in common with Giz. Culturally, I feel like they do. Very DIY, very fuck the system. I just adore them. And they're also very, vacillate between serious and goofy. And those are the things I like. That's who I am. I think that's who you are, too. Yeah,
I are, too. I are too. It's nice. And I will say one other little piece of gathering is... My band, who shall remain as nameless as me, is playing a show on Thursday, and we never play, and we're playing at a rock club, and it's cool. And go play music, everybody. It's just so nice. It's such a good thing for the heart. I think art is nice to make, and I think sometimes we can get things off our chest. I have all sorts of ideas about the world and things I want to say, and no one should fucking listen to me. Who the fuck am I? And why don't... But you can make things in this world. You can make a little piece of art. You can draw or write poetry or write songs or go scream in a alcohol-filled little venue somewhere. And then, I don't know, it makes me feel better to, like, make a thing and put it in the world. Art's rad. And
are you going to record the show?
No, I don't think so. Maybe parts of it will be recorded. We'll see. I don't know. But that's just for me. That's just, you don't need that. But it's nice. It's just nice to have an outlet. And I started late. I'd never been in a band until, I don't know, I was like in my late 40s. And I'm just really glad. So it's never too late. You don't have to have been playing all along. It's fine. You could just go fucking do it. Who's going to stop you? I don't even know you.
I'm going to stop
he
me.
He doesn't know. He can't stop him.
No, I'm going to stop me.
Yeah, I won't stop you. You're the only one stopping you, and you're welcome to.
And we'll keep it that way.
But you don't have to listen to you.
Mm, well, that's interesting. But you do have to listen to and watch Chunky Shrapnel, because that's what we're going to talk about next. That's going to be fun.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to rewatching it. I've enjoyed it the couple times that I've watched it before, one of them in your living room.
That was fun.
And, it was a lot of fun. I look forward to watching it again. Thanks, guys.
All right. Cheers, guns.
Fuck right off, friends.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for your cooperation.
That was fucking sick.